This interview is brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. You can check out the full episode at lickinonlending.com.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the Hot Topic segment. Good to have you here. I am proud and honored to introduce Darius Mirshazadeh. It's good to have you here on the podcast. Darius is CEO of The Money Source, not The Money Store, The Money Source. They go by TMS. Now, my company is TMS, Transformational Mortgage Solutions. They're going, who is it that took our initials? Well, we have him on here, and I'm so thrilled to get to know him. He's based right here in Austin, Texas. The company is headquartered in New York. They have big growth going on in Phoenix. They're a nationwide presence. They also have a large presence up in Connecticut. So really excited to have The Money Source here. It's, again, a national lender, technology-driven, which really kind of gets my attention, and has also done a lot as it relates to being leaders in the marketplace. I love how they get out and do their messaging, which is one of my favorite topics. So without further ado, let's welcome the CEO of The Money Source, Darius Mirshazadeh. Darius, good to have
you, David.
Friend.
Oh, great,
new
great
friend.
To be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, it's a real honor. And don't get to learn here recently that you're based here in Austin, which is even better. You were formerly with, give us a little insights into your background for those who may not know you. I hear that you got your master's in entrepreneurial program at MIT. Is that true?
Yeah, it's a non-accredited program, but it's a program that was formerly called Birthing a Giants. And it's like a program you would apply to and bring in CEOs from all over the world. At the time when I did it, you had to be under the age of 40 to be accepted. So Michael Dell graduated from the program, fellow Austinite, Kendra Scott, she's a graduate of the program.
Oh, yeah.
And it's through Entrepreneurs Organization, does it now, but when I did it, it was Inc. Magazine, MIT, and Entrepreneurs Organization. So yeah, it's an amazing program. It's changed my life in meaningful ways as a business person. And I'm glad you know, I'm actually in an alumni program now called Gathering of Titans that I go out to MIT.
Ah, I love that. And, yes.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool program.
There are some great stories that are coming out of that. Well, it's a real honor to have you here, Darius. First of all, kudos to your people. They are checking out podcasts. They found ours. We're honored that they would knock on our door and say, you got to talk to Darius because of a number of things going on. And it's really the growth that's going on in there. And so tell us a little bit about the company. You're technology-driven. You're founded in 1997, I have in my notes. And then retail, wholesale. Tell us a little bit about your business, and then we're going to get into some questions.
Yeah, so the company was founded by our chairman, Stavros Papastavrou, in 1997. We were really kind of on the sidelines till about the mid-2000s and started doing retail and then really kind of pared that down and got into correspondent lending in 2011. Myself and a couple other business partners, we joined the firm in 2013 and became business partners with our partner, Stavros, the chairman. And we really focused on wholesale and correspondent. And then as we built up a large servicing portfolio, rolled out retail, and we made the strategic decision earlier this year. We sold off our retail and got out of our wholesale business. And really for us, we've always been 80% correspondent lending, and we've really become more of a servicing company. So about 5 years ago, we brought our servicing in-house. We've built some amazing servicing technology that we call SIMI, which stands for Servicing Intelligence Managed Easily. And for us, we're really all about what's it like for the life of the homeowner after the closing table. What can we do to make that an amazing experience for our customers? And we've done some really outstanding things, from 80 NPS with our customers to the best in class technology that our customers get to live in. And so for us, it's all about how do you really help the client for the next 30 years that they're with you, not necessarily the 45 days of the loan process.
Yeah, and that's where you have 80% of the complaints that come into the CFPB are on the servicing side. So it's really it's great that someone is doing a great job. We know our friends at Dove & Mule have good friends there, and then our folks over at some of the other subservicers, great companies and all that. But I tell you, we can't do enough to help homeowners not only get their mortgage but stay in their home, especially as they go through life events. So let's start off by talking about some of the Money Source's beliefs on future expectations for what homeowners are going to be looking for when working with lenders and servicers. What's your belief and what's your vision?
Yeah, it kind of goes back to what we were just saying. you know, our position is that as technology becomes stronger and as the mortgage business and banking business moves from an analog business to more of a digital business, and we're in this transformational process right now of seeing that happen. You were talking about earlier on the show with Rocket Mortgage and this technology movement that's happening. We're seeing it with Blend Labs and Roostify and all this automation of the process. And it's only like the way we see it is the common sense says the blockchain becomes more prevalent as AI gets stronger. And as we move into a digital mortgage, like commonplace, that the process will be less important and the experience that the customer has and the connectivity they have from an emotional standpoint is what's going to matter. Do they love you as a service provider, or are you just, you know, some guy that does it quicker and cheaper? And quicker and cheaper might have been what's driven the business for the last, you know, 15, 20 years in some ways. And you have providers that lean on that. And we think quick and cheap will be the standard. That's just automation. Technology will make quick and cheap normal. Like if you're not quick and cheap, then you'll be out of business. So quick and cheap will be normalized. But will they have a connection to you as a brand? And we believe that those who can build that connection will win in the marketplace.
Yeah, it's so important to differentiate yourself. I was talking to my client in Virginia, Alcova, earlier today about, you know, what's your unique value proposition? What's differentiating yourself in the marketplace? And you look at the process of mortgage and lending and servicing, and we're seeing it be disrupted. I think we have so much more disruption ahead. I'd love to get your perspective on that because of technologies like AI and blockchain. In fact, I noticed on your website you had an article on Housing Wire. You made some comments about that. So talk about what you're doing to differentiate yourself and some of the things that you're seeing in the industry that are leaders that you respect and are following.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's really looking at it from two different lenses. One is the human side and one is the technology side. And so right. On the technology side, it's for us in particular, it's really how do we create a better servicing technology because that's where our customers live. In our customer portal, what can we do to make it easier for them? In our servicing portal where our team lives, what can we do to make it easier for them? Because inevitably, if you're viewing the employee as the first customer, which we do at our company, how can I make it their life easier so that they can provide better service? So the technology is about enabling the team member and the customer to have a better experience. Then the human side is, what can I do to delight the customer? What can I do to make the customer love the experience so that they are talking about me as a promoter? And if you look at the NPS technology, Net Promoter Score methodology that we use and a lot of Fortune 100 companies use, it's you really want those promoters out there. So for us, it's not just about making it a transaction, but really a relationship. If you make 12 payments on time with us, we send you an email and we celebrate it with you. We congratulate you when you call in. You know, if it's your birthday, we wish you happy birthday. So we're looking for these little human ways to delight, but it also how do you build a better mousetrap from a technology standpoint?
Well, I'm interested in your thought on blockchain. And then, Alan, I'm heading next to you, so get ready. Teed up there, Alan, and then we're going to go over to Alice, Andy, and Joe with some questions. But let's talk briefly. What's your thoughts on blockchain and its impact, specifically on servicing technology? I'm seeing your Housing Wire article. We'll put a link to it, or you go to the Money Source website. It's there as well, but we'll put a link to it in our show notes. But what are your thoughts on blockchain?
You know, our thoughts on blockchain are pretty straightforward, and it's that if you look at the blockchain as this new centralized repository for information where everything is checks and balanced, and I'm not having to have this verification process I currently have in the business, now what you've done is you've kind of leveled the playing field from a process standpoint. So for instance, if all the banks have all your customer information on a blockchain and all the services have all the information on a blockchain, and there's no verification process involved with many of the things we do throughout the origination and servicing process. So we believe that's going to become commonplace. This verification process for taxes, for insurance, for did they make their last payment, all these little things that we do that are manual processes are going to become automated through the blockchain. And then you start to look at things like FICO scores, for instance. Right now, I look at your FICO score and I look at your payment history to make a credit decision. Well, what if I looked at your servicing data, if that's on the blockchain, and I could say, wow, that guy makes his payment every day on the 16th of the month. I don't need to call him anymore because it's the 15th.
Yeah.
He hasn't made his payment yet.
Yeah.
And I've seen that for the last 8 servicers he's been with. He always makes his payment on the 16th. Well, I'm not going to spend my time or money. Now I have a more efficient process. So our belief
is that's a good example.
A much more automated process around how do we interact with the customer. And then, like I said before, if the blockchain has everything centralized, now the verification process of a mortgage process, of a servicing, everything from service loan boarding to offboarding to loss mitigation, that all becomes automated as well. And I do think that from a servicing perspective, and that's where we're focused because we're a sub-servicer for other lenders. That's our big push right now.
Oh, I didn't realize that. You're doing sub-servicing for okay, good. You are a sub-servicer. Good. Good, good, good.
Yeah, our big agenda is to disrupt sub-servicing. We're trying to really make a dent in the world of sub-servicing because we have pretty strong opinions about a need for that to happen. But if you look at sub-servicing or the buying and selling of bulk MSRs, well, one of the biggest complaints you hear from every single lender, ourselves included or servicer, is that the loan onboarding process, the moving of mortgages from a DMI or from a loan care to a TMS,
right.
It's not the most fun process for the lender or for the borrower, for that matter.
We consult in that space, and they have to hire a consultant to get it done thoroughly and right. It's way too arduous.
Right. So we think that you're going to see a servicing utility come out of the blockchain where borrower just sits in there and I just move them from one lender to the next and they sit back in the blockchain. And now there's no moving of your mortgage like it is today. It's going to be a click of a button, if that. So when we start to think in terms of this new financial foundation for the world banking system and for the servicing and for the origination system, you could start to let your mind run wild on what the opportunities might be and what the new world of lending is going to look like. And that's how we're approaching this. When we look at this, I had an offsite with some of my managers. We're talking about the cost of servicing, and I think we were saying, oh, it's $20 per month for a service loan. And I said, well, why can't it be $2 per month? And it was like, what would you need to do to make it $2 a month? And one of the things you need to do is I can't go to 3,006 counties manually to pull data. It's got to be in the blockchain, right? So there's all these little things that need to change. And we're excited because we think we're at the beginning of that process digitally for the industry.
I said, Alan, I will go to you and with the question. I should note that the money source was also awarded 2019 Housing Wire's Tech 100 winner, so it's pretty significant. Alan, what's your thoughts
yes.
on this?
Well, Darius, good to talk to you again. I think we've talked in the past, or I've chatted with some of your team members, and I've been following you guys for quite a bit. We actually brought you up on the radio program quite a few times. My show notes, I have you back in March. You guys had a good press release that, you know, talked about the patent pending technology and your servicing application and all that. So I think, you know, when you talk about blockchain and what you guys have been doing and the process that you're inventing, it leads me to believe that you could be very successful at blockchain, because a lot of us in the industry have sort of, we see how it will work. We see some people testing it, but in the end, it's who will own the data and who will create one of the majority of certain blockchains that we will adapt to. And, you know, if you're right there with the servicing data and you've got access to new servicing being put on, right? And then also old, and you get to start to acquire more data and you just get to build out that blockchain. You have a very unique ability not only to create blockchain, but to create unique data and aggregates that you can put in blockchain about the data. And so I'm making a quick guess that from what you said today, it's sort of the direction you're going, but I thought I'd ask you that question if that's something you're willing to share and talk about.
Yeah, for us, we just started taking a look at, well, if the future of financial services will rely on a foundation based on the blockchain, how will that affect servicing? And we started just ideating around that. And so for us, there was a couple areas that we thought were interesting. One was this idea we call servicing in a box, and we have a patent pending on that, which is it shouldn't be difficult to move a client from one lender to the next. It should sit in the blockchain. And so this idea around client sits in the blockchain and really they're moving between these different platforms through the blockchain, and their data is coming back into the blockchain. Now it changes this fragmented system we have today, where I have one guy on MSP that's doing a conversion to Fiserv, or they changed the name to Sagent now, and I need to pull it out of a mainframe BDE file and put it into a file that's actually workable. This is, you know, when you look at the way servicing technology is today, it's no wonder that customers get frustrated when they're dealing with their servicers, because we're working on antiquated technology. So
right.
For us, the idea is that you need to have a new foundation for where the information is stored, and we believe the blockchain is going to allow for that. The next thing that we look at is, well, once you have that data there, to your point, how can I make different credit decisions? For us, we do this in Simi, in our servicing software. I can go into my system, my subservicers can go into our systems, and they can see payment trends. They can see that, like I said before, David, I don't need to call this guy. He makes his payment on the 24th every month. You know when I need to call him? On the 25th, and he hasn't made his payments, right? So I don't need to call him on that day, because he just likes to pay a late payment, and that's when he makes his payment. That's what he does. So for us, it's, well, what other decisions can I make? I can actually start to make credit decisions as an originator based on how they make their payments. Because I can see that there's a flow of how they make their payments. And maybe this person can even have a higher DTI because the way they make their payments is different. They prioritize this payment over their credit card payments every single time. I know that they do that because the servicing data says that, and it's all aggregated in one spot. So so we're excited. We think that there's going to be some major changes in the way home origination and servicing is done because of this new technology.
Yeah, I love the direction and you know, the fact that you can be a creator of content, I think is huge, because you add so much value than just storing data. So that's great to hear. And as I tail off, for some of my peers ask you some questions, to outsource or not to outsource, curious of your quick, maybe 5-second thoughts.
We're a believer that the first step to auto AI is, we call it OI, outsource intelligence. So, there is important, not at the expense of our team, but to make our team stronger and to give them more tools and to get more bandwidth and productivity out of it. We think outsourcing is, we are a big fan of that. We think it's important for both the team member and for the company.
That's great.
Love it. That's good. I love that. OI and AI. I think it's so true. You better have that, because if you're going to have 1 million homeowners that are satisfied, which is your 1MHO Plus program, which I see on your website, that's good. Alice, jump in here. Any questions for Darius?
Yes. Well, actually, my question is the last one that you guys just asked about the outsourcing, because in the servicing model, there seems to be a lot of places where you can, you know, leverage that. So I guess I'll pivot here and say, you know, Darius, you've brought up really great ideas for folks who are trying to understand this side of the business and may not deal with it a lot of times. What are some of the other technology advances that you'd like to share with our listeners that you're all working on?
You know, our biggest thing is we built Simi, and we built that to try to transform the world of servicing. So for us, we're a correspondent lender. Our lenders, when they're selling us a loan, how does the customer live in that? But not only that, how does the person who's servicing live in it? So as many of you guys might know, you know, most 70-80% of all loans are serviced out of a mainframe system, you know, and so for us, we're a customer of Black Knights. We're a fan of their mainframe system. But for us, we wanted a digital experience for our team on top of that. And so we built Simi. It sits on top of Black Knight. And what that does is that changes the behavior of your team that's actually servicing the loan. And when that changes, then you start to see movement on the side of how loans being serviced, whether it's being subserviced, which is something we do, or whether we're servicing for our own loans as a correspondent lender. And so I think the important thing there is, and I brought this up on another podcast recently, is if you're a lender and you're selling your loans, how's that loan getting serviced? Because that's a reflection on you as the originator.
It is.
David asked me
so
earlier,
true.
What my background is. I was a telemarketer for a mortgage company in high school. So I've done literally every single job you can do in a mortgage company, from a telemarketing to processing to loan officer to broker to lender, wholesale lender, correspondent lender, now servicer. And when you have that type of experience, you understand that who services my loan for the next 30 years is a reflection of me as the originator. And I say that originators need to really open their eyes to the technology that's being that's servicing their loans and who's servicing it. And when they're selling their loans, where are they being subserviced and how are they being subserviced from a technological standpoint? And if it's not to their liking, then they shouldn't be surprised when their borrowers aren't happy with who's servicing or how it's being serviced. Does that make
sense? Really good. Yeah, that does. It really, really does. Andy Schell, I'm interested in the blockchain part of it and the accounting side of this, especially as you and I have recommended various subservicers. The fact that the money source is getting into that's fascinating. Really glad to hear that they're shaking it up.
Exactly. And Darius, hi, it's Andy. It's great to meet you on the phone. A quick question for you. You mentioned about you brought servicing in-house. So I do a lot of servicing work, as Dave mentioned. I've actually been in servicing almost 40 years. And so the movement, the in-housing of servicing is a hugely more complicated process than most people anticipate.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have wows that you can share that you observed, learned, and discovered that you wish you would have known before?
Great question.
As you brought servicing in-house?
Yeah. it's a very interesting experience. I think that a couple things. Number one, like we were talking earlier about the movement of loans, the frustration that servicers have from onboarding new loans from other servicers.
Yes.
I cannot explain how frustrating that is as a new servicer. And it's just, I would say, get ready for that. Like overstaffed by 20-30% because the influx of phone calls you're going to get from your borrowers who are going to be very frustrated by that movement is going to be surprising to you. For us, it was, and I don't want to knock any of the servicers out there, but we've had this experience with most of them, most of the subservicers at least. And so that was the reason we brought it in-house. We'd worked with most of the subservicers, and we weren't satisfied with the experience. So for us, it's being overstaffed to handle that call volume. I think it's the second thing would be to, you know, really get realistic around what the servicing technology platform you use can do for you. For us, mm-hmm. we ended up building a lot of that ourselves. And I think that we were just kind of trying to do things the way it's always been done. And we realized quickly that that wasn't really the culture of the company. So if you're a pure technology-driven origination company and you're going to a mainframe system like a Black Knight or Sagent, just be aware that I remember the experience when I walked into our call center the week that we moved our portfolio, and we moved about 43,000 loans. Right now we service about 170,000, but I remember I'm a guy from California, Silicon Valley area, you know, and it was kind of eye opening to see the green screen again. I hadn't seen it since I was in like second grade.
It's so true.
Exactly.
Right. So I was like, why are they working in like a DOS-based program? And that's what most of our services are working in. So there's nothing wrong with it. They're great. It's the system that of record for probably most loans in America. But just get honest with yourself on what it's going to take if you're a technology-driven company. If you have a smart 1003 Blend Labs on the front, just know that on the back, that you're going to probably be working in the mainframe, and how is that going to affect the culture of your company? And for us, that was, you know, we had to work with our partners and we built some of our own stuff, but it was a eye-opening experience.
Yes, exactly. That's great. So let me say something in 15 seconds, Dave. So servicing is still about paper. You still have paper files. Every mortgage origination still has paper that people have. And when you're a servicer and you're transferring servicing, you get paper file. So years ago, I had purchased a 20,000 file portfolio and had all of the 20,000 files in boxes delivered to my office, and it's like filled this warehouse. It's amazing how much boxes and paper and manual effort it takes to do servicing.
So true. It is so true. I mean, people just totally underestimate it. So true. Someone who else has experience in servicing is Joe Farr. Joe, you've managed a few servicing portfolios. What questions come to mind when you're thinking about what innovation could be happening?
Well, I'm curious that there is where an example or two of the things that they've built into their systems that you feel like you get the most customer reaction to in a positive way that really helps you to stand apart.
Yeah, so for us, there's a couple of them. I mean, first of all, and David was talking about this earlier, our system was built mobile ready. So we have a mobile app. You can make your payments on there. It's really a modern platform. And so for us, our customers come in, it's a modern platform. It's in a .NET environment. So that's important because when you look at some of the less than modern platforms that are not in a .NET environment, the customers kind of, you know, it's dated, right? It's 15, 20 year old technology now. But for us, we built this really cool thing. We call it the opportunity screen. And so our team.
Opportunity screen. I like that.
Yeah, we have an opportunity screen. We use this with our sub-servicing clients and with our own portfolio. And so our team, you know, and our customer service reps, they work in the opportunity screen. And it'll show something like, hey, has this person had their onboarding call, yes or no? And it'll flash if it's a no. So then they know that, hey, you know, I can need to catch them up on that. It'll say if it's their birthday or not, and then they can wish them a happy birthday. It'll say if they're a veteran or not, and then we thank them for their service to our country. It'll ask them if they'd like us to enroll them in paperless or not. It'll ask them if they've actually set themselves up to be in the portal to self-service themselves. So it's all these things that we're doing to educate the customer. The other thing that we've done, and this is a big complaint you might hear on the servicing side, is escrows, right? If they're going to have an escrow shortage, it'll pop up on that screen. And this will anticipate it month and month in advance. So we could say, you know, you may want to go check with your county because it looks like your taxes are being reassessed on the origination side. A lot of times, especially in non-disclosure states, they're going to underwrite the loan based off of the old taxes. And then 9 months later, they're going to get doubled. You know, your taxes are going to get doubled on you. Well, we don't like the customer to get surprised by that. So for us, the opportunity screen will show these different things so we can proactively service the loan. And when they're talking to us, they're having a much better experience. Instead of having a reactive experience, it's a proactive experience. And the opportunity screen does that. My favorite thing on the opportunity screen is when they've made 12 payments on time, we thank them for making the 1 year of payments on time. So who thanks their customers for making their payments on time? Nobody does. They call them up to harass them when they don't make their payments. We go in the other direction.
Yeah, that's really good. That's really, really good. As we wrap this up, one of the things I want to give you a shout out on is you were voted as the highest rated CEO in America in Glassdoor, and you've built a company that has achieved some really great success with respect from within your employees. And you're writing a book, I understand, on building high performance companies using core values. As we wrap this up, it kind of is a good segue as we get into our future podcasts on leadership. Talk about that. How did you accomplish being voted number one? Is that where you submit and have a whole bunch of employees submit that? Or you obviously had to do some things to be awarded that and then interested in your new book.
So no, I didn't do anything. The way it works is Glassdoor, the employees rate you on Glassdoor themselves. This is their own thing.
That's
that
right.
They do.
It's anonymous. That's right. Yeah.
Right. And so that was all employee ranked, and I didn't have a high enough score where I was in top 10 in the United States. So that was cool. I think I was number 9 in the United States. And I thought that was an honor, and I was happy that, you know, to get that reaction from our team. But Andy was talking about a couple of things around cultural and organizational design execution when you're talking about profitability and how do you inspire your employees and this idea around effective hiring principles. And for us, and we're talking about MIT, the first thing we learned at MIT is around building, you've got to have core values. And in most businesses, you go to B school and they say mission, vision, values, right? You got to have your mission, you got to have your vision,
right.
You got to have your values.
Yep.
And then you go and people do that and it becomes what I call cultural ruin. Something that you visit once a year and people kind of look at it, it's on a piece of paper, maybe they post it on a wall somewhere and that's the end of that. What they don't do is they don't make it the language of the organization. And for us, I believe that
I like
if you want to see change, and I think that this goes from everywhere, everything from politics to nations to nonprofits to the Cub Scouts to a great company. The great companies share great values, and they promote them, and they make them easy for people to remember, and they support them, and it becomes the oxygen in the air of the organization. And if you can do that and use that as a filter for hiring, and use that as a lens for decision making in the organization, that it becomes, like I said, this DNA that kind of floats around, and people just end up using those words, and their words become their decisions, and their decisions become their actions, and their actions become the results of the organization. And so for me, that's really what the book's all about. It's called The Core Value Equation, And it's a
good
leadership framework. It's something that we've used at TMS. It's why we've received a lot of the awards we've received is we've done, in my opinion, built an amazing core value-driven organization. And we continue to lead with that. And that's really how we believe is the best practice for if you want to create sustainable change from a leadership perspective. It starts with the values, and you got to make that come to life.
I love that. Core values are so critical. What's the name of the book again you're going to be?
It's called The Core Value Equation. I'm final edit this week. I'm giving it to the publisher this week.
Good. When will that be released? I want to get a copy of that. I definitely want.
Oh, man.
I'm going to ask you for a signed copy.
Yeah. No, it'll be my pleasure, David. I'll hand deliver it to you while I'm a beer. I'm guessing the publishing process is like about 120 days from locking the manuscript. So probably like around December, January.
So good. I mean, we need that. We're really in a, you know, we talk about leadership. We talk about, you know, what a company's core values are. And it's just, like you said, they're out there posted on some frame, if they're even framed. I talked about they just get visited once a year, and it's so important to build a company around that. Kudos, Darius. This is I'm so grateful that Paul lined up, or that your people reached out to us so that we could get Paul working to get you on as a guest. So very excited to have had the opportunity to meet you and interview you, and now that knowing that you live here in Austin, Texas, I can't wait to get together for some barbecue or something. Kudos to your success, Darius, and really looking forward to learning more. I got a feeling that we're going to be learning more about you in the future, hearing about you as one of the the money source has already done well and has got national prominence, but I have a feeling we haven't seen the full top of the trajectory on this one. So very excited to learn more and grateful to have you take a few minutes out of your day to join us today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, pleasure's mine. Thank you.
You bet. We've had Darius Mirshazadeh as our guest today. It's an honor to have him. And next week, we've got a regulator coming on. How often do you get regulators coming on? We've got Jeremy Windham of the Alabama State Banking Department. And Dan Smith, who's also on the podcast of Compliance East, will be bringing him, has brought him on, talked him into coming on. We pre-recorded this because regulators like to make sure that the T's are crossed, the I's are dotted. So we recorded this last week, and it's getting edited and approved, and we're excited to have him on. Also joining us will be Tom Hennen of Calix Software. I haven't heard that name in a long time, Calix. But anyway, Dan, Thomas, Jeremy, and I are on a podcast, and it'll be really interesting talking about fintech. RegTech is actually what we're talking about, which is a subsection of fintech, is RegTech technology, regulation technology, that is changing the way you're going to be experiencing your audits in the future. You're not going to want to miss next week's podcast. You're in a loan originator going, what the heck do I care about RegTech? You may want to pay attention. It's something you need to be aware of, just how efficient and effective it is moving forward. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, Resex, the Warehouse Lending Division of United Bank, the MBA, the Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, CMLA, as well as Velma, the Mortgage Coop, Vidyard, and AI Assist. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate you being here. Have a great week, and be sure to come back next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.